When I first moved to southern New Hampshire, I was driving in a small town and pulled up to a roundabout where I yielded to someone making their way around the circle. But a funny thing happened. The driver stopped mid-circle and waved me in. Now, I don't know much about roundabout etiquette, but I thought the red triangle told me that the yielding was my job. But no one else was coming, so I obliged and pulled out in front of the driver. People are really polite out here, I thought to myself. Last week, I had a different experience at the intersection of Continental and Amherst Road. A boxy SUV took a left turn in front of me heading the opposite direction, followed closely by a blue sedan with a woman's head and shoulder sticking out the driver's side window. Her angry yells pierced through the noisy traffic as she shook her fist at the car in front of her. Now, I've seen quite a few angry honks around here, but nothing quite like that. If the woman had leaned out of her car any further, she would have fallen out. But I can't blame the woman too much. Whether we express it or not, I think we're all feeling a little bit like that these days. The tension in the air is palpable. People are afraid. The future is uncertain. Nothing is the same. Who knew that Tom Brady's departure from the Patriots would be so bad? The truth is, we're all experiencing the effects of the coronavirus a little differently. Maybe you're at an age bracket or in a stage of health that makes you particularly vulnerable, and your mind has been flooded with the possibility of getting the virus. Perhaps some of you are uncertain where your next paycheck is coming from, or how you're going to pay people at your work if the money doesn't come in. Chances are there are some of you that feel like all of this has been overhyped, but you still can't deny how much things have drastically changed. Everything from public gatherings to professional sports are gone. The only kind of pasta you can get at Walmart is Bonza pasta. And if no one else is buying that during a crisis, you're not sure you're willing to go that far either. A week ago, you were arguing with your spouse about which way the toilet paper goes. And now the two of you are brainstorming places you can go where no one else thinks to buy it. Last week, I did my toilet paper shopping at Lowe's. The world may not be ending, but normal is gone. And one has to wonder if it will ever be the same again. When the things we have counted on for so long fall into disarray, we start to feel overwhelmed and anxious. For many of us, those worries live on the surface, and for others, they bubble underneath. How can we experience peace in the midst of so much disorder? In the coming weeks, we want to take a few minutes together to consider some of the ways God might be inviting us to know his peace when everything appears to be falling apart. In the very first chapter in the Bible, God says something that theologians have been puzzled by for ages. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Unlike all the birds of the sky, the fish of the sea, the wild animals and livestock, God made mankind unique. There is something special about human beings that sets them apart. But what does it mean to be created in God's image? People have speculated that it refers to consciousness or a higher level of intelligence. But the Bible never really hints that. Is it possible that being created in the image of God means to do something that God does? If we rewind to the very beginning of the Bible, Genesis opens up with a well-known statement. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. This is a summary statement that tells us what's about to happen. In verse 2, the action begins in earnest. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. This story of God shaping the universe doesn't start with the creation of matter. Matter was already there. The earth before it was the earth is described as formless and empty. That word formless sounds like a pretty neutral word, but the Hebrew word behind it, tohu, actually signifies a terrible, eerie, deserted wilderness. And darkness is over the surface of something called the deep in this space. We learn that the deep is also called the waters. Deep waters might send a positive message to someone today who loves taking their boat out on the lake, but the ancient Hebrew people weren't known as seafarers. They would have been a lot less excited about this. All of these images come together to create a picture
of chaos. But darkness is not the only thing reigning over this place of chaos. It turns out that the Spirit of God is hovering over the waters. This may have been a symbolic way of saying to ancient ears that God was exercising authority over the chaos. And it's out of this chaos that God starts to put things in order. In fact, creation itself is an act of ordering. It's no accident that God places his crown jewel, human beings, in that order to continue the work right after he creates them in his own image. His first commission is to be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, and over every living creature that moves on the ground. And it's also no accident that at the end of the book of Genesis, we find these words on the lips of Joseph, whose brother sold him into slavery. You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. You see, God brings order out of chaos. And by creating you in his image, he has commissioned you to do the same thing. Could it be possible that God created you for a moment just like this one? Maybe instead of looking at tomorrow with trepidation, there is a relationship you can grow by touching a neighbor or a friend. But not literally, of course. Remember, we're practicing social distancing. Is there someone you can deliver groceries to? Is there someone you can call? Is there someone you can write a card to? Maybe your best response to this season of chaos is something creative you haven't even thought of yet. It's natural when normal goes away to fight tooth and nail to preserve whatever we have left. Too much change can be a stressful thing. But what if disorder was an opportunity to make something beautiful instead? Could it be that something better could come of it? Tikkun Olam is a concept in Judaism that is interpreted in some Jewish denominations as an aspiration to behave and act constructively. A seminary professor used to talk about this frequently. They would say that every time you see a piece of trash and walk by it, that is an act of hell. And every time you see a piece of trash and pick it up, that is an act of heaven. I was recently walking by a highway thinking about that concept as I observed the mounds and mounds of trash tucked in the ditch beside it. I thought to myself, if I start picking up this trash until I see no more, that would feel a lot closer to hell than leaving a piece of trash behind. But the image stuck with me anyway. Tikkun Olam literally means to repair the world. If bringing order out of the chaos is our purpose, chances are we're fixing something else when we seize the opportunities that come our way. Chances are we're repairing our souls. We can experience peace by knowing our purpose. In the coming weeks, it's going to be easy to fall into despair and to let the disorder derail us. But if we can reflect on who God made us to be, we'll be able to make the best out of what comes our way. Perhaps we'll even be able to create something beautiful.